It's a numbers game with your host, Gil Alexander.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
Hour number two of a numbers game right here at Visa, the Sports Betting Network, SiriusXM Channel 204, Visa.com, the Visa app, Fubo, Sling, and Game Plus. It is Gil Alexander. How y'all doing today? Still to come, Brady Cannon. Want to talk some PGA with him. You want some golf bets this weekend post-US Open? We'll actually look back, get his thoughts. Brady's on Bryson DeChambeau. Certainly have mine. And there's a little bit of a sort of a an uptick in, you know, journalists now pointing their fingers at Bryson DeChambeau and saying, is anybody going to say something about this? So we'll get into that with Brady. And before we talk baseball, because Paul Spohr is here, and I have so much to talk to him about baseball. Did you find the music for Brian's song?
Yes.
Okay, can we play just like a couple measures of that? I don't want to get us in trouble. No, not the melody I'm looking for. What was the melody you guys just played for me? Because that's the one that sets me on. All right, let's try to get to the... There it is. Oh, it kills me. That's it. It's the music. Okay, I don't want to get us in trouble. But that music, coupled with the storyline of Brian Piccolo dying, and then Billy Dee Williams, who played Gale Sayers, giving the locker room speech. James Caan played Brian Piccolo. I'm done. I can't go on. That is that music. It's the music that does it. All right. Baseball. We'll try to segue here. Ladies and gentlemen, he loves baseball more than you love anything. Host of the Sleeper and the Bus podcast. He writes for Fangraphs. The best baseball mind I think I know, along with all our other guests, Jason Weingarten and Joe Pita. Just give me those three guys. I don't have to talk baseball with anybody else ever. It's Paul Spohr, everybody. Good morning to you, Paulie.
Gail hit me in the feels this morning with the Brian song there.
Have you seen that movie?
I certainly have. It was a big favorite of my mom, so watched it as a young kid.
Uncontrollable crying for me as a child. Uncontrollable.
If it doesn't get you, you might not be alive.
You might not be alive. That's right. Again, Gale Sayers, the reason we're talking about it. Gale Sayers passing away at the age of 77. Iconic NFL great. Let me start here. Let's start with the blind resume game. I sent this to you this morning. I hope you got the text.
I did.
Okay, these are seven different players in the National League as we wind up here with 5 days left in the Major League Baseball season. And I have kept this to runs, hits, homers, RBIs. I don't know why I threw in stolen bases. That was kind of dumb. And then their slash.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, why not? And then their slash line, batting average, OBP, and then OPS. Which is OBP plus slugging together. Now, those are, I didn't go into any of the advanced stats, which I'll add a layer later, and I'll just tell you who like absolutely shines when you go to some advanced stats. But just based on these primarily baseball card stats, with the exception of OBP and OPS, how do you choose from this group? I hope everybody's if everybody can see this at Visa.com or the Visa app, the numbers are too much to like repeat all of them. When you just look at this without names, can you choose one here, Paul?
No, it's remarkably difficult to really land on just one guy and say that it's him definitively. You know, you might have a pick in there, but there's not really any way to land on somebody and say, this is who I have, and I'm dead set in who I've got.
That's right. That's
you
right.
Know,
not
with
a hill
no
to
defensive
die on.
Context, Yeah. There's no defensive context to, think about war considerations. It's really difficult with the numbers you've given. This is a very tight race.
Very tight race. And by the way, we'll get to a plate appearances thing with this, too. I mean, there's so many layers to it. Can we add the names now, Jason Caan, for those watching at Visa.com and the Visa app? Let's add the seven names to whom those stats belong. At the top was Tatis Jr. I don't think you can give it to him, Paul. Like, he just stopped playing baseball.
He really did kind of hit a wall, and he's not a rookie, but he and Luis Robert were kind of on the same trajectory of both just dominating this year. They both just kind of hit a wall. And obviously it's only a 2-month season, so over the course of 6 months, they probably would have amped back up at some point. But, yeah, I don't think Tatis, I don't think he gets it. I think there's some soft factors that push him away.
Yeah, it's fascinating. And the other quirk to this is of those seven guys, there's three groups of two teammates. Skill Alex, we'll get to that. We'll get to that. Where I was about to do the reset, but I figured it was 15 seconds earlier than it used to be. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. That was awkward. We have three sets of two teammates, right? So it's Tatis Jr. Mm-hmm. and Machado with the Padres. It's Seager and Betts with the Dodgers. And then it's Freeman and Ozuna with the Braves. Now it's Gil Alexander and Paul Spohr right here on A Numbers Game at VCT Sports Betting Network, Sirius XM Channel 204. Sorry about that. So there's that quirk, right? Do people take votes away from each other if they're two players that are comparable on the same team? And then there's Juan Soto, who has had the fewest plate appearances of all of them, but he plays for a last place team. There we're showing the plate mm-hmm. appearances. So Tatis Jr., 244 plate appearances at the top, Ozuna 243, Freeman 242, and then it crashes all the way down. Soto 179.
And I think before you even get into the last place team thing, you can eliminate Soto on the volume aspect of it. You have to start getting into some of these softer factors that are tougher to eliminate guys for, like playing time and team context. Normally, I'm somebody who's adamantly saying, don't judge a player based on his other 25 teammates. But when it's close like this, and you've got those six guys, those three sets of teammates that are all on contending strong teams, even if Soto had the volume, I think that would be a factor that would eliminate him, because I can use it as a tiebreaker. I just can't use it as a main factor. If Soto had what he was doing in full volume and had, say, for example, like 3.5 wins, 3.5 WAR that would kind of be leading this year, I would vote him even on a last place team. But when you factor it all in with the lesser volume, with the fact that we have these other six players, I do think Soto gets pushed out pretty easily.
You're really handicapping the voters, right? And it's going to come down to what each voter, what each voter values, right? Because if you go into, yep. and I won't belabor this too much longer, we'll go on to something else. But if you go into weighted on base average, which to me is still the best catch-all stat for what yeah. every hit means. Isolated power, which is a measure of a hitter's raw power, tells you how often a player hits for extra bases. And then weighted runs created, which is WRC+, an improved version of Bill James' old RC stat, which attempts to quantify a player's total offensive value and measure it by runs. When you add those three, WOBA, ISO, and WRC+, Soto and Freeman kind of skyrocket. And so then for me, as a guy who holds lots of Corey Seager tickets and who desperately would want Corey Seager to win this, I think if I'm a voter today, I think Freeman is my guy.
Freeman is indeed my guy as well, for a lot of the factors that you're talking about. And then, you know, you bring in WAR into the mix, and I work at Fangraphs, so that's the WAR that I'm going with. Mm-hmm. I know we should have a standardized one, but I'm going to go with Fangraphs. He is leading there as well. Now, it's a small lead when you're looking at 3.1 to 2.7 over Machado and 2.9 over Tatis. Tatis, by the way, gets back in with some improved defense this year. But when you're looking at that WAR lead, it's not massive. But with the offensive stuff that he has, WAR being there, I think it's Freeman's, and, you know, he's never won an award. I think it's about time. Not saying that he deserves it because of the time. I'm saying he's been such a good player for so long. We've seen so many great seasons. I think it's finally this year, in this weird shortened 2-month season, that he gets the gold here and brings home the award.
Yeah, I think I will have to. If I had a vote, I think that would be my guy in a year where guys like Seager and Ozuna. Where other people, when they talk about this award, you don't even hear those two guys mentioned. But those mm-hmm. could be the two guys that end up in top five in all three Triple Crown categories. Top 10 at worst. But both of those guys, Seager and Ozuna, could be top five in all Triple Crown categories. And yeah, no, it'll probably go to somebody else. It's amazing. By the way, you could do this for lots of awards, but I think NL MVP is the one that's the biggest scrum of all these with blind resume.
Yeah, it's remarkably tight. There's obviously some fun to be had in the AL with the way Jose Ramirez has been surging. But I think you made a great case here about how tight the NL is. Again, I ended up going toward Freeman at the end, but there's still half a week too.
Yeah.
And I know that sounds crazy, but a lot can change over these remaining few days.
It's true. If Mookie Betts hits five homers between now and the end of the year, maybe it's Mookie Betts right at that point. Or for any of these guys. It's fascinating. Who do you have Ramirez for AL MVP? Is that who you would have?
That is where I am leaning right now. you know, Jose Abreu's right there. I think it's neck and neck between these two. You know, I put out something yesterday on Twitter about what Ramirez has been doing, and I hashtagged it ALMVP, and somebody interpreted that as that being my definitive pick. It's not somebody I'm saying is the lock. I just wanted it to be tagged there in case people were searching ALMVP stuff. I think when you look at he and Abreu, though, it's a big two-man race right now. Trout ends up getting eliminated because of the soft factor of his team. Again, normally I don't do that, but when it's a tiebreaker situation, I do think it can work as a tiebreaker. So I think Rendon and Trout being on crummy teams, they kind of get pushed. It's not like they were leading in war either. If Trout, again, if he had like four wins above replacement to Ramirez's 3.2, then I don't care about his teammates. But the fact of it is he's not quite leading the league and everything the way Trout normally does. So I think it's really Ramirez and Abreu right now with Tim Anderson, DJ LeMahieu, and then Rendon and Trout kind of lurking as well as we go into this final stretch here.
Talking to Paul,
and I would pick Ramirez.
Talking to Paul Spohr from Fangraphs. We could do this for every award. We could do an hour on it, but I know most people don't have tickets on each of these, so we'll leave it at MVP. Let me segue to something that Jeff Passan wrote about at ESPN.com. Jeff Passan, who does such a great job. And the playoff schedule came out. By the way, he wrote a piece that talks about tiebreakers exhaustively. I won't get into that because I don't want to like make people's heads explode. But tiebreakers here the last week of the season, particularly in the National League, where it's a scrum for, you know, six teams fighting for the final four teams, something like that. I can't remember what we said at the beginning, but it's really like a bunch of teams fighting for everything below the Padres in the National League. But what was, I think, even more interesting to me is the playoff schedule and the way that teams are going to have to arrange pitchers here the final week. First of all, there's the layer, and we were talking about this on Primetime Action last night. Davey Roberts is one of these guys who already has come out and said, now the Dodgers are probably going to end up first place in the NL West anyway, but he voiced it. He's like, we don't care where we end up, right? So it's this strange year where seeding isn't like, maybe as fans and as betters, it doesn't mean as much to us, doesn't mean as much to the actual people involved as it does to us, or is what we think it would be. But here's the playoff schedule. AL Wild, this is according to Passan, AL Wild Card Series, September 29th to October 1st. NL Wild Card Series, September 30th to October 2nd. Remember, those are all best of threes at the ballpark of the quote-unquote home team. Well, not quote-unquote home team, but the no home crowd, I should say. The four teams that advance from each league will then have 4 days in between the wild card games to enter the league's proto-bubble and get ready for the division series. AL teams will then play games on as many as five consecutive days from October 5th to October 9th, while the NL will do the same from October 6th to October 10th. The ALCS runs October 11th through the 17th. The NLCS, October 12th to the 18th. Game one of the World Series is October 20th, and only then are there planned off days October 22nd and 26th. That means that starting with the division series, Paul, teams that advance could play as many as 14 games in 16 days before the first World Series off day. And it means, whereas in the past, a pitcher could start game one, say, of a division series and pitch game five on 5 days rest, this year returning for a fifth game would require doing so on 3 days rest. Same thing LCS, right? Game one starter would not be on full rest until game six. So the question to you becomes, of all the teams that are going to perhaps make the postseason, some that have locked it up already, some that are on the bubble, if you will, to get into the bubble, what managers do you trust to navigate that correctly? And which managers are you like, oh no, this guy's not going to get it?
Oh man, that's actually a great question. I have some pretty strong trust in Kevin Cash with the Rays to kind of manage everything. They obviously have a lot of depth, so I think that that's going to suit them well, because you're going to really need depth. You're not going to be able to rely on the same two, three quality relievers every game because of the off days the way you've been able to in the past. If they make it, I do like Craig Counsell in the Brewers, and I like the way their bullpen's setting up with Devin Williams, Josh Hader, Freddie Peralta, and even Brent Suter. Keep an eye on what he's been able to do. I know Dave Roberts catches heat, and I understand, but the depth and just the talent that they have, it's almost kind of turnkey to where I don't even know that he can completely mess it up. I mean, he'll try. Like, you know, I don't have the utmost confidence in him. I do have a lot of confidence in Bob Melvin and what he does with Oakland. Also, Terry Francona with Cleveland. and Aaron Boone with the Yankees. I'm eager to see how some of these new guys on the scene do with Charlie Montoyo in Toronto. They've actually created something of a nice bullpen on the fly. Rocco Baldelli, you know, looks like they're setting up to face the Yankees. Can they finally slay their dragon? Jace Tingler, new manager with the Padres. What can they do? But I kind of trust some of the stalwarts, some of the staples that we're used to seeing year in and year out. And I kind of love this, all those games in such a short time. That's the way baseball is meant to be played.
Oh, I love
it. As a Tigers fan, I think it's you can definitely rust over in the playoffs a bit if you sit too long. So I love it. I think it's going to be a lot of fun to have this going. And you got to have some depth this year.
Yeah, I think Rays Jays right now is what it's setting up to be 1-8 in the American League. So that will be that'll be fascinating. In if the Jays in fact get there, a couple questions. One, and I'm asking you to speculate here. 60 game schedule, obviously this year. I think, but it, really, those of us who are baseball purists even enjoyed most of it. Maybe there's a rule here and there we'd like to see disappear after this year, but still, what I mean, I love exactly what you're talking about. I can't wait for this postseason. Do you think that there will be a rush to get back to 162 next season? Or do you think, just as sort of like a nod to caution and the realization that perhaps this went really well, maybe there's a hybrid between 60 and 162 next year?
Yeah, I could definitely see something like that as we're transitioning, because I don't think that it's going to be magically back to normal as far as COVID and everything as we enter next February when pitchers and catchers start reporting. So why even try to go for the full 162? Obviously, we have to see how the winter goes. And, you know, this really kicked into high gear in December and January. And then really next level in February and March as we started to really take it seriously. So that's right around the time that baseball will be starting back up. I think they should go in with a plan that for this year, or for 2021, focuses more on like a 130, but over the course of the 6 months gives them some time to work with in case things aren't great. Now, it could flip on a dime if there is somehow a vaccine that everyone trusts and it's all good to go and we're back to normal. Okay, then back to 162 as quickly as possible. That seems like a pipe dream, though, and I'm not going to operate under that idea. And I think we are going to go with closer to a hybrid for 2021.
10, 11 days from now, when the best of threes are over, which is the biggest team that falls? Which is the best team that falls?
I think the Twins do slay their dragon and take down the Yankees. You know, I think they have some pitching questions beyond Cole. And, you know, I think their bullpen is still at least star-studded by name, but has definitely hit some bumps here and there. Their offense is not as strong as it has been. It's still strong, don't get me wrong. But I think they can be beaten is all I'm saying here with regards to the Yankees. You know, can Jay Happ and Masahiro Tanaka hold up for them? Because those are kind of their 2-3 guys right now behind Cole. They're just beatable. They're not the unbeatable dragon that they've been in previous years. And as long as Minnesota doesn't get psyched out and that these current players don't carry too much of the weight of history with them when they weren't even around, then I think that they can actually beat the Yankees and take them down for once.
It'll be so interesting if the Reds end up playing the Dodgers too. If the Reds play anybody, it'll be interesting.
I would love that.
Yeah.
I want the Reds and Brewers in. No offense to Phillies fans.
No offense to San Francisco fans, Paulie. How dare you?
Hey, I don't, you know what, Gil? I'm not even considering the Giants. How about that? How rude is that?
Wow. That is brutal.
How rude is that?
Giants magic. Still 5 days. It can very well happen.
That's true. They very well could.
As Passan points out, they don't win many tiebreakers, so they would have to get their outright ties.
Exactly.
Don't go in their favor. All right, last 2 minutes here, and I'll just start before you give your DFS picks of the day. Have you, I don't know if you have any data to support this or if this is just anecdotal for you personally, has DFS not quite been the same for you this year, and what do the numbers bear out if you have any on that?
Oh, it's definitely been different. I'll give more anecdotal than something that's hard and set, but mainly, you know, one of the big things that we've seen is how many more reliever wins there are. So starters, which generally dominate in DFS, I'm not a power player. I'm not somebody who puts in, you know, hundreds of lineups every day. I usually kind of have my one lineup of the day on small stakes. But I would love to talk to some of these guys that do play on that high end and wonder, do they lean away from some of the starters that are in the mid tier because they're worried that they're only going to go 4 or 5 innings? That's been the biggest switch there when I am playing. I'll still go for like a Bieber, Bauer, you know, Giolito, those top guys. But those solid guys that you would normally expect 5 or 6 innings out of that are now going 4 or 5 often. And if they go 4, they can't get the win. That has definitely changed the landscape. And hitting, you know, it started off really slow. Then it kind of flipped on a dime and all of a sudden hitting was back and ready to go. So it's been a topsy-turvy little 2 months there with DFS. It's been a lot of fun to play, but definitely different in this 2 month setup.
All right. 30 seconds. Who are you playing? Give us some names.
I mentioned Bieber. He's super expensive, but he's almost in a Kershaw level of peak Kershaw, where you just take him anyway because he is so good and we're not getting so much of that ace pitching. So I got to go with him, and I'm a DraftKings guy, so I take 2 pitchers. You can also save some of the money by going Sixto Sanchez as your second guy. He's only 7,700. So I'm going to go Sanchez and Bieber.
Sanchez and Bieber on the hill today for Paul Spohr. Thank you, Paul. Appreciate it as always, man. I'm pumped. Let's enjoy this. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good, Gil. Take care.
Paul Spohr loves baseball more than you love anything. At Spohr, S-P-O-R-E-R, on Twitter. The name of the podcast, Sleeper and the Bust. It is a numbers game. It's brought to you by BetMGM Nevada. I got some French Open futures to share. What I landed on. Next, numbers game at Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
To a numbers game with Gil Alexander.
Numbers game proudly brought to you by Indeed. Indeed helps you find the high impact hire your business needs, and fast. You'll find lots of great candidates and no long-term contracts at indeed.com/high impact. It's Gil Alexander. We get tweets at Beating the Book. Always appreciate the feedback. This is from Todd Canarsie Born 65. Brian Song, something for Joey. Bang the drum slowly. There's never a dry eye, no matter how many times you've seen any of those. Kip Heisterman, you got to find a new college football regular since Pete Futek has never seen Brian Song. Ban him until he watches it. It's the only way. Oh, God. And there's always one person. Then he sends me, there's a person who sends me stats. Since he loyalty still feel dirty, talking about college football COVID cases, and he shows that no hospitalizations. Do you have stats on their grandparents or their parents? By the way, you made a great point, Jason. Do you have stats on long-term effects of this 5 years from now for these kids? When you get those, when you have those stats from the future, let me know. I'm still excited about college football, but come on. Really? We can't hold 2 thoughts in our heads at the same time? That's not this kind of show. We hold several thoughts in our heads at the same time. Mr. Smith, trying to enjoy my lunch break over here, and now I'm tearing up over the Brian Song piano chords. Thanks, Gil. Dude, can I tell you something? I almost lost it right there. You guys cue it up again? That Pepsi guy. Is it bad that when we pull up the NL MVP blind numbers, I go directly to batting average? I picked Freeman's stats as the MVP, then Soto. That was a great exercise. The blind resume is sometimes not great, but that one with the NL MVP, you cannot choose. Everybody's going to have their own reasoning for who they pick. J-Rod, I'm going to look at that Twinkie series price from what Spora said. Also, Marlins Magic. Marlins very much in it. And let's see. Oh, Raj Bhatti, I demand that Paul Spohr be put on indefinite double secret probation for his lack of faith in Giants magic. I agree. So we have different tweets of people wanting to ban the guests for their egregious lack of faith in Giants magic and for never having watched Brian Song. Play that music one more time if you would. Yeah, see, this first part doesn't really do it because this doesn't recall memories from 5 years old, but this does, this part right here. Slays me. Just kills me. Wow. Okay. I don't know. It's tough to get to tennis picks.
but we're going to have to man up here and try to do it. Okay, tennis picks. If you heard my segment with Drew Dinsick yesterday, some of this will be the same, but some will be different. On the men's side, I really have to pull it together. Please, if you do anything this weekend, watch Brian Song. It's a tribute to both Gale Sayers and Brian Piccolo. Let's start on the men's side. The men's side, I did play Diego Schwartzman. If you listened to our segment yesterday, you probably caught that. Drew got Diego Schwartzman for the French Open, by the way. We're on clay already. They're in qualifiers at the French at Roland Garros. So this is getting underway here very soon. He got Diego Schwartzman at 100-1, which is just ridiculous. I got Diego Schwartzman at 40-1. I think if you run this simulation, yeah, that's still a good price, 40-1, if you can find that on Diego Schwartzman. He will have to probably get through the King of Clay, once again, Rafael Nadal. This is, you know, Nadal's tournament to win, even though Schwartzman beat him in Rome on Rosh Hashanah on Saturday. God's work on Saturday, by the way, everybody, if you're scoring at home. And then, you know, there's obviously Novak Djokovic lurking as well. I think Drew made a great point. If you think Dominic Thiem, who was always the person you considered the guy that could beat Nadal on clay at Roland Garros, if you think he's going to come off his U.S. Open win and then sort of emotionally be ready to win this, I mean, that is a tall task. So I'm with Drew on that. That's going to be a tough sort of mental thing to get back up for. So no bets on team, but I am on Schwartzman at 40-1. And Rublev, just because he was 100-1, I bet him, but I don't really have an expectation on Rublev. But really, Schwartzman was the only one because, let's face it, it is Nadal's tournament to win. And I don't really love the price on Nadal. It's not very bettable to me. I don't trust Novak. So Schwartzman is really the main bet there, 40-1, but also Rublev at 100-1. The ladies' side's a little different. Jason Kahn, in your video for producer number 7, you pointed out that you listened to this show and had Iga Swiatek at 30-1.
True dat.
So we still have that in pocket. And the other one is I bet Victoria Azarenka at 12-1. Victoria Azarenka now is my other pick on the ladies' side. French Open, from a tennis slam to a golf slam and back to a tennis slam. God, you gotta love it right now. We'll come back. You know what I bet yesterday that I'd like to share with the people? Debate props. Joe Biden, Donald Trump, you want some crazy debate props? I got you covered. Next, Numbers Game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
To A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander.
How confident are you betting on this weekend's football games? There's always room to improve your sports betting IQ, and VSiN is here to help you bet smarter this weekend. Start your 7-day risk-free trial and place your next bet with confidence. Sign up today and you'll get all of these. Point Spread Weekly, our digital betting guide with NFL power ratings and consensus picks from our experts. By the way, that blind resume thing we did, Jason Weingarten does that in Point Spread Weekly with advanced stats, and he gives his picks as to who he thinks ought to be the NL MVP. So it's Point Spread Weekly. It's 24/7 live video streaming with full replays of all VSiN shows. The College Football Betting Guide with previews, predictions, and betting strategies. Daily emails with best bets from all our shows, hosts, and guests. Plus, you can always access our parlay calculator, prop bet search engine, and pick tracker on VSiN.com. Just visit VSiN.com/subscribe to start your risk-free trial today. That's VSiN.com/subscribe. It's Gil Alexander. Jason Kahn, producer number 7, is here as well. Jason, can I interest you in some debate props?
I am from very interested.
From faraway places. Oh, who doesn't love a good debate
prop? It's coming
prop?
Up on Monday.
Monday? Is it Monday?
I think it's Monday or Tuesday. It's next week.
Are they going up against Monday Night Football? No, they wouldn't do that, would they?
I think they might. I got to double check it. I'll double check.
September 29th. That would be Tuesday. Tuesday.
My yeah. bad.
I didn't think they're that nuts. They're like, we'll go up against baseball. We'll take our chances. Republican incumbent President Donald Trump and the Democratic nominee Joe Biden debate on Tuesday of next week. Apolitically speaking, we're just betting. We're just trying to make money. I don't care what your politics are. And now my computer froze. But let me tell you what I have bet here.
Will President Trump enter the stage wearing a mask? There is no price high enough that I would not bet this. I laid minus 1,200 on no, he's not wearing a mask. Seriously, if you gave this to me at minus 5 bajillion, I would bet it. President Trump is not wearing a mask when he enters the stage. So that's one bet.
I can't believe they listed that.
That's pretty interesting, isn't it? Here's one. Will President Trump mention his nomination for the Nobel Peace Prize during the debate? The yes was a massive dog. The yes was plus 730. And you know what Young Gill said to himself? Young Gill said to himself, I'm just going to bet that one because why not?
Trump's a modest guy. He might not.
Yeah, that's right. He's known for modesty. He may not mention that. I'll take I bet the yes. I was like, I'm betting that. Bet it again when it got knocked down. Bet it a third time. And then I said, okay. Now I'm just going to root for the President of the United States to talk about his nomination for the Nobel Peace Prize. I'm willing to lose all these, but I think that now I'm into the debate. See, this is what Jimmy Vaccaro always said. You want people to vote in the election? Make it bettable. You want people to watch a debate? Man, I'm all in now. Here's a trickier one. Will Joe Biden enter the stage wearing a mask? That's a little more nebulous, right? The yes is, hold on now. It's my computer freezes. I want to get this right. Oh, now I'm not going to be able to properly see anymore. But the yes was a favorite. The no was the dog. So the expectation is that he will. Joe Biden has been seen in public many times wearing a mask. So the expectation there by the market was that he would, in fact. Let me go to the phone because my computer's frozen on that. Do any of those, would you have bet the same way that I did on those, Jason?
I would have bet the same way. I think Biden will probably...
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know how he's going to play that. Of course, if you saw the rally last night, again, we're apolitical speaking. We're just trying to make money here. Trump was already mocking him. It's like, oh, he's going to wear a mask. I don't think Biden cares.
He may walk out with a mask and take it off.
It's all about, remember, the wording is all that matters. It's, will he enter the stage wearing a mask? Let's see if I have any others. There was one about ratings. Will the ratings of this debate be higher or lower than the first Trump-Clinton debate?
So much higher.
I stayed completely away from that. By the way, that's a coin flip now, but that moved tremendously. I think no... I'll have this wrong. One of them was a huge favorite, and it flipped to the other one being the favorite.
Is going to be the most watched debate ever.
I think so, but you know what the issue is with debate, with ratings numbers? You have to factor, okay, baseball that night. Baseball's still not, you know, it ain't football. How's that for analysis? And then... People are funny with ratings stuff, right? Because it's all, I don't know how they cull it together from all the, I stayed away from that. I didn't want to be part of that.
Yeah, all the streaming and you know, when you add it all together.
I was like, okay, no. Oh, here was one. Will a tweet be published on the official Trump Twitter during the actual live debate? The no is a big, big favorite. Although not as big, I don't think, as it was. It's minus 500. But he's the only one who has access to his Twitter. He's not going to the tweets while he's on stage. I don't think.
I doubt that.
All right. What else here? Let me get. Are you enjoying this, Jason? I'm enjoying this tremendously.
I
could do 2 hours on debate props. After the debate live broadcast ends, will President Trump tweet or retweet a reference to? And I can't see what that is. A reference to something that happened in the debate? Is that what that is? Yeah. The yes is a dog. The no is the favorite. Really?
He absolutely will.
No at minus 297. I think it's a reference to something that happened in the debate, but maybe I can't see the end of that sentence here. That's the problem with my computer freezing. If it's just a reference to something that happened in the debate, the no shouldn't be the favorite like that at minus 297. So maybe it's a reference to something else. I'll have to look at that. And on and on. I mean, there's a whole bunch of these in faraway places, and they're adding them as we go. As I see, there's new ones. There's new ones as well. But yeah, those were the biggest ones that I just mentioned right there. So those are fun. I mean, we talk about what does this mean from a betting standpoint. What I'm saying is betting makes all things more enhanced. And if I was going to, if anybody was on the fence about watching that, well, if you bet on those props, you're absolutely watching it. Because my entire night is baseball on one screen and listening to see if Donald Trump mentions the Nobel Peace Prize nomination at those prices. So that's fun. That's Tuesday. We're having three debates, right? We actually are going to have three debates. That's right. Happening.
Three scheduled.
Remember, there was a little bit of a buzz there that...
Joe Rogan?
I don't know if it was Joe Rogan. Was he the one who said... There was a period there where they act like maybe there won't be debates at all, which would have been unprecedented. And what is already an unprecedented year. But that's not going to happen. We're going to have all three debates. So we'll get into that. Actually, when Jason Weingarten's with us tomorrow, I'll ask him if he bet any of these, because I'm sure he had some thoughts. By the way, here are some others. Will President Trump be seen on camera drinking water during the debate? Yes, big favorite, minus 358.
Two hands.
Will they make physical contact, Biden and Trump? Yes, the dog, the no, minus 440. That's right, they're not going to shake hands. We'll get into some more of these. Brady Cannon next. Let's talk some DeChambeau next and golf picks. Numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
To A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander.
September is showtime at BetMGM Sports, and they're offering new customers a chance to win $100 in free bets when you place a $1 wager on the Heat Celtics game tonight. And if either team hits a three, you win. Just sign up and make your first bet with bonus code VSIN100 to take advantage of this special offer. There has never been a better time to sign up at BetMGM Sports, the king of sports books. Just download the BetMGM app today and use promo code VSIN100 to win $100 when you bet $1 on the Heat Celtics game. And if either team hits a three, you win. Visit BetMGM for terms and conditions. 21 years of age or older to wager. Colorado, Indiana, New Jersey, Nevada, or West Virginia only. Please gamble responsibly. And if you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700 in Colorado and Nevada. 1-800-GAMBLER in New Jersey and West Virginia. And if you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana. Promotional offer not available in the state of Nevada. We get tweets at Beating the Book. James McIver, did Biden enter wearing a mask when he was going up against Sanders? Earlier, or was he talking about earlier debates?
Yeah, I don't think it was an issue back then.
No, it wasn't the same. Wasn't the same climate back then. By the way, here's one clarification on one of the debate tweets. After the debate live broadcast, will President Trump tweet or retweet a reference to the ratings of the debate? That's why the no is favored there.
But that won't be that night. That won't be till the next morning.
That's what I'm saying. So that should be higher than minus 297. I didn't bet that one though. The ones I bet again were, will he mention Nobel Peace Prize because the price was right? Will he wear a mask? No, there's no price high enough for that. And then the last one, which I didn't mention, will Joe Biden refer to the president as Donald or Don only and not in conjunction with his title president during the debate? The yes is the dog at plus 291. The no is minus 398. People expect Biden to refer to him as president.
Yeah, absolutely.
As well, to show that sign of respect for the office. Here's one from Sean Harnish, who does such a great job with baseball. Thought you might like this angle for the last week of MLB. This is from Sean Harnish. Since Sunday, out of the 43 games played, the losing team scored more than four runs only three times. 34 of the 43, the losing team scored three or less. Teams have checked out. Game time is short in the last 7 days. If you like a big favorite, rather than laying minus 200, you can look at the other team's team total under, usually 3.5 or 4.5 at minus 110. Between that and the cold temps, along with good teams resting for the playoffs, it makes for good underplays, or just key in on the bad team's team total under. Might seem like a small sample, but it's something we see every year. Usually it's the last 2 weeks or so of a normal season. That's interesting. I mean, I would add what I mentioned on the show yesterday and on Primetime Action last night, which is we saw this with the NBA bubble too, with the seeding games. I just think we as fans and bettors overrate how much these teams care, especially in a year like this, where division titles don't mean what they did. You're all in a best of three. Doesn't matter where you finish. So I don't know if seeding matters, and then you have to sort of speculate, when does it matter? Would the team try to avoid Like, would it, would, yeah, I don't know. The Dodgers are going to be one. So, I mean, the Reds would have been an example of a team you wanted to avoid. So that's not going to be up to the Dodgers anymore. But in the American League, right? Do you want to try to avoid the Yankees if you're up at the top? Hey, let me, you know, I mean,
the Nationals last year,
I'd rather play the Astros than the Yankees. Maybe you have that calculus, but all, I guess all of that to say, there's so many things you have to consider. And here's one more. This is from Jonathan Gosselin. This is what we were talking about with the Tyrod Taylor thing. I was killing Anthony Lynn about him saying immediately, yeah, we're going to Tyrod Taylor. As soon as he's healthy, we're going right back to Tyrod Taylor. But then I mentioned yesterday, and I mentioned it again this morning, uh-oh, there's an injection involved. And that changes everything. Then I totally get why Anthony Lynn is saying what he is. Adam Schefter reporting, the Chargers team doctor accidentally punctured his own quarterback, Tyrod Taylor's lung, just before kickoff Sunday while trying to administer a pain-killing injection to the quarterback's cracked ribs, league and team sources told ESPN.
The legal implications of that.
Punctured
totally, yeah,
his lung.
It's brutal.
Now you know exactly why Anthony Lynn was saying what he was saying. Oh, no, we're going back to Tyron. We're absolutely going back to Tyron. You can't bench a dude for that. Let's go to Brady Cannon. Brady, good morning to you. How you doing, man?
I'm good, sir. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Brady, the host of Long Shots, of course, here on the network, and just a guy who is, I don't know if you know this, Jason, a past Super Contest winner. We should point that out as well. Oh, by the way. Okay, Bryson DeChambeau. You had a tweet this weekend. I probably should have put this up because I was watching football, Brady, and I forgot about you. Like, I noticed your tweet, and I was like, that's a great tweet. And then I went right back to watching football, so I apologize. But there was an article written in San Diego, and I'm going to get the exact the byline and everything on this. But this was fascinating to me because what you were saying about Bryson DeChambeau is now the buzz is starting to sort of grow. This is from Mark Ziegler at the San Diego Union-Tribune. And he wrote a piece that was entitled U.S. Open Win by Bulked Up Bryson Could Create PED Problem for Golf. Tell me your take on this, and I'll read something from this piece.
Well, we've never really had this filter into golf. There have been accusations, very minor, about Tiger Woods over time. I think it was Vijay Singh in the old deer antler spray years ago. But really, that's never, you know, infiltrated the world of golf too much. But there have been questions about Bryson DeChambeau because of his very quick bulk up. I mean, it was really just when we did the restart, he came back and he was, you know, 40 pounds heavier. And he talked about, you know, his new diet and the protein shakes and, you know, fine. And obviously it's working. But there were some people that kind of threw up a little bit of a red flag and said, So it's definitely not proven. And I'm not necessarily making any accusations. But there is that school of thought out there that exists.
Here's what Ziegler wrote. Golf might have a steroid problem, he says. It's not that Bryson DeChambeau won the U.S. Open by six strokes on Sunday after adding 40-plus pounds of muscle in two shirt sizes to a six-foot-one frame, half of it during the PGA Tour's 91-day pandemic hiatus that essentially ground worldwide drug testing to a halt. He's never run afoul of the PGA Tour's anti-doping program, never failed a urine or blood test, never been verifiably linked to performance-enhancing drugs. It's how he did it. That's the problem. And he goes on and writes about this. It's just very interesting to me from a betting standpoint. I mentioned this the other day, you know, like you, I had tickets on lots of other people, but by the end of the third round, and perhaps that took me longer than most, I just realized, I'm like, look, Patrick Reed, for him to have been on the leaderboard, he had to just scramble his way. He was just not hitting fairways, and it was just, he was pulling stuff out of his behind. Matthew Wolff had to have the most scintillating round of golf in the third round to get to the lead of that leaderboard. And even then, Bryson DeChambeau was just sitting there in the middle being like, yeah, I'm still here. And you just realize that his margin of error is so much wider than anybody else's that you had to bet him at that point. I got him at plus 245. Like I said, I'm not even saying it in a boastful way. I'm saying it in as I wish I had figured that out sooner kind of way. The upshot of this, do you kind of have to bet him to some degree in every single tournament moving forward?
No, not every single tournament, but I think what we have witnessed, the PGA Championship and Winged Foot are perfect examples. You know, he did very well at the PGA Championship as well. And I think when you have a narrow track and you have rough, and the rough is designed to be very penal and do exactly to Patrick Reed what you're talking about and do what it did to most of the field, I think Bryson is so strong that the rough does not bother him as much as it does other players. And I think it bothered him a little bit more at Harding Park because of the humidity and the wet nature of the grass there and where it was able to grab the club maybe more so. I thought the rough sometimes at Winged Foot even looked a little bit wispy, giving him more ability to power through it. And certainly give him a ton of credit. He powered through it and still made terrific shots and put himself on good spots of the green, and he did a great job around the green. We know he's going to lead the field in strokes gained off the tee quite often, but if you put him on a smaller course, you look what he did in the FedEx Cup playoffs. He didn't really fare that well. You know, when you get a different type of golf course, we don't always see him at the top of the leaderboard. It was actually odd that he didn't do well at Olympia Fields, because that, again, was a, you know, PGA Tour or a PGA Championship U.S. Open type setup with the high rough where he could just kind of bomb it and not get into the penal areas or not have the penal areas affect him as much as it does the rest of the field, yet he didn't fare well there. So when you have a course where he is able to absolutely bomb and gouge like he did at the Rocket Mortgage in Detroit and overtook Matthew Wolf on the final day, yes, if you can identify those courses, he's absolutely a force to be reckoned with. But I think on the courses, even Augusta National, where it takes a little bit more creativity and strategy, maybe that's not the perfect setup. And so I wouldn't blanket bet him.
No. Maybe not blanket bet him, but I don't know. I might have a little eye on him on everything, a little something. We got 90 seconds here. They're in Punta Cana, the tour this weekend in the DR. Who you betting here, Brady?
I took a shot on Luke List, Sam Burns, Jonathan Vegas, Matt Jones, Will Zalatoris. This is really a kid to look for. He finished sixth in the U.S. Open. He's 24 years old out of Wake Forest. He is your next Matthew Wolf, Colin Morikawa, Scottie Scheffler. He will be a stud on tour very soon. And then Patrick Rogers. I have gone to the Bryson way of doing golf, Gil. Every single one of these guys is a bomber. So I'm just betting on long hitters now.
All right, list those real quick again. List, who else?
Yeah, Luke List, Sam Burns, Jonathan Vegas, Matt Jones, Will Zalatoris, and Patrick Rogers.
All right, Brady Cannon, everybody.
We'll see if we can get one of them home.
Yeah, the host of Long Shots, along with Wes Reynolds. The greatest, let me see if you agree with this, Brady, the greatest golf betting show there has ever been. Yes?
Indeed. We owe Matt Eumanns credit for, you know, making that description.
Oh, did he? Is he the first one to say that? The greatest golf betting show ever? Yeah. All right. Well,
the world's number one rated golf betting show.
That's right. Just absolutely drowned in competition for that title. Thank you, Brady. I appreciate it as always.
You got it.
Appreciate it. Brady Cannon, who, by the way, I don't know if I mentioned this earlier, has won a super contest. Thank you for not playing the Brian song theme on the way out. I would not want to weep again. Thank you to all who listened and all the feedback at Beating the Book, both good, bad, and indifferent. Always appreciate that. Tomorrow we'll do it again. Good luck with all your bets. The two baseball bets that we gave out earlier, the tennis picks, we're all over the place. DFS, good luck with all. From all of us here at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.